So, Jonathan Davis, thank you very much for agreeing to speak to Radio Free UK. Tell us a little bit about yourself and what you do down here in the City of London.
Thanks, Alan. I'm absolutely delighted to be interviewed by you. I totally commend what you guys are doing. I think it's absolutely brilliant that someone is out there presenting the reasons why we need to vote to leave the EU. As for me, I'm a chartered financial planner. I run an economics and wealth management practice from deepest, darkest Hertfordshire. We work with fairly to very wealthy people, and we advise them on tax minimization, portfolio management, and essentially financial security and well-being. What got me really interested in what's going on in the world is, strangely enough, not so much the work that I do, and I've been in financial services now for over 25 years. I know I don't look it. We'll just gloss over that. Is a thing called the internet, to my mind, the greatest invention since the egg. Because until 10, 12, 15 years ago, your news came from the mainstream media, the BBC largely, the newspaper that you read, and maybe the odd periodical that you might subscribe to or pick up once in a blue moon at the station. But the internet has given us a colossal access to up-to-date data, information, videos, webinars, discussions, opportunities to find out whatever you want to find out. And I might say, as an aside, it's hardly surprising that, quote, they, unquote, now want to regulate the internet, because let's face it, what you can find on there is perhaps not what the establishment want you to find. Now, of course, there are some deep, dark sections of the internet which need to be looked at very carefully, and it's fine that those should be policed accordingly. But on the whole, the invention at CERN in Switzerland is absolutely fantastic, and it's done wonders for my knowledge and interest in what's going on in the world, and indeed for my practice. So 10, 12 years ago, I started to learn what I didn't know before. I learned about what's really going on in politics. I learned what's really going on in economics and in markets. And the stuff that you learn is easily available. Just you need a bit of time to research, to find out where you need to go. And then you've got social media. Someone once asked me, someone in the media as it happens, asked me, why are you on Twitter? And my answer was, because it's a brilliant learning tool and it's a brilliant teaching tool. Funny thing is, I've never in my life opened a Facebook page, but I'm an avid Twitterer. And it has taught me so much. And I learn so much from people who are far more clued in, far smarter than me. I don't even come close to what they know. And I can access their knowledge free of charge. Absolutely astounding. Now, your station is all about learning about the EU and why we should leave. And as I said right at the outset, it's absolutely fantastic that you are debating, discussing, presenting these issues, because the people of Britain have arguably the biggest vote to make in perhaps a few months, maybe a year, that will affect Britain for probably the next 100 years.
So the to-ing and fro-ing that's going on with the stay-in, the leave-out campaign, how is that affecting things in the markets and in the economy at the moment?
Well, I find it very interesting, with a bit of a wry smile. We see some captains of industry saying it would be the end of British civilization as we know it, to coin the phrase end of Western civilization, if Britain, UK were to leave the EU. We've seen Goldman Sachs, JP Morgan, et al., big investment banks, of course, saying that if we leave the EU, it's going to kill the city, it's going to kill the pound, it's going to kill the British economy, and they're saying the pound sterling just now is collapsing because the polls are suggesting that the UK might actually vote to leave the EU. Well, I have news for your listeners. There isn't a single city professional who is making financial decisions based upon Brexit. Not a single one. It is a fact that the pound has been falling. I can look at the peak before the crash in late 2007. For a pound, you could buy $2.10. Now, it's approximately $1.45. We can look at a couple of months ago. For a pound, you could buy €1.40. Today, it's €1.30. So there's no doubt that the pound is weakening against other major currencies. But to suggest it's because there is somewhat equality in the polls between the Remains and the Leaves is absolute arrant nonsense. I'll tell you, Alan, the reason why the pound is weakening, and it's simple economics. It's nothing to do with politics. George Osborne, so-called capitalist chancellor, presides over the largest twin deficits in the developed world. What does that mean? The twin deficits are to do with your import and export trade and how much you borrow. So, you know, we often hear of the deficit. Of course, most people, I think, actually are a bit confused between deficit and debt. The debt is the amount that the government owes. The deficit is actually quite a new term. Those of us with grey hairs will remember the term the public sector borrowing requirement, the PSBR. You might remember that yourself, Alan. And that is what the deficit is. It's how much is the government borrowing on an annual basis, the public sector borrowing requirement. And we have, as a percentage of the size of our economy, we have the largest government borrowings in the developed world. It's between 5 and 10% a year of the size of the economy that we're borrowing. Now, the tragic and remarkable political point here is that a Conservative chancellor has borrowed more than Gordon Brown. I'll let that sink in for a few seconds. Gordon Brown, the most Marxist chancellor since goodness knows when, and George Osborne is borrowing more than Gordon Brown. That is a fact. And of course, the reason why he's doing it is nothing to do with the economy. It's in order to buy votes. In the 2015 election, of course, the Tories wanted to be re-elected. They didn't expect to be, but they were. And the reason why they were re-elected is because the economy was basically okay, except for the fact that it was only okay because Osborne was borrowing willy-nilly. So, first largest deficit is the annual borrowings. The second of the so-called twin deficits is the difference between our imports from Germany, from France, from Italy, and of course from China and Japan and so on, and our exports to whomever. The fact is that because it's very easy to borrow money in this country, we buy a lot of stuff. Now, that's fine. The problem is we buy BMWs, we buy Prosecco, we buy Chinese-made electronics and TVs and mobile phones and spaghetti and you name it, we buy it all from abroad. And we buy far more, we import far more than we export. And that is called the balance of payments deficit. And again, as a percentage of our economy, the difference between exports and imports is between 5 and 10%, one of the largest in the developed world. Put them both together, and the United Kingdom for years has had the largest twin deficits in the world. So if you borrow a lot of money, and if you import more than you export, it means that your currency is inevitably unattractive because you need to buy other currencies to import. That's the reason why the pound is going down. I will not abide at so-called captains of industry or the financial sector saying that the UK economy or the sterling or whatever has a problem because of Brexit. It's arrant nonsense.
So your clients are not running to the hills. They're not moving their money out of the country. We are seeing this fall in the pound for the reasons you've explained. What do you see, and I know it's very difficult for you to maybe predict the future, but how do you see the country and how do you see the economy if we do vote Brexit?
As Yogi Berra said, the great baseball coach, there's nothing more difficult to predict than the future. In the run-up to the referendum, yes, because of uncertainty, there will be a little bit more volatility in the currency, in banking shares, in export company shares, but volatility doesn't necessarily just mean down. As it happens, it's a statistical term. Volatility means up and down. So there'll be a little bit more volatility, but the reason why there may be an issue in markets is not because of Brexit, it's because there's a global economic slowdown. The US is likely to be in recession this year. The UK, having experienced 3% growth in 2014, 2% growth in 2015, is likely to see sub 1% growth, if at all, this year. So this is nothing to do with Brexit. China, as most people will know, the second largest economy in the planet, is having its slowest economic growth in literally three decades. So of course, if America, the largest, and China, the second largest, slow down or go into recession, of course, there's a global economic slowdown. But once the referendum takes place, my dream is that the British people wake up and the don't-knows, who are the ones who are going to decide this election, because as many of your listeners will know, the polls are pretty equal between the Remains and the Leaves. So it's the don't-knows who amount to about 15 to 25% of the voters who will actually decide this referendum. My dream is that the don't-knows come to the Leave side, and let's say that we know the final vote by midnight on that day. I can tell you that for the next few days, there may be some movement in markets, but not because necessarily there's been a vote to leave, just because there's been a decisive vote. yea or nay. And markets, of course, need time to become acquainted and comfortable with a situation. They need time to compute what is this going to mean for business XYZ ABC, for politics ABC, and so on. So inevitably, there's going to be a bit of volatility going up to the referendum, and a bit of volatility post the referendum, whether or not the vote is remain or leave. But this is the point that we need to get. Ultimately, the referendum is not going to detrimentally affect British business. It is not going to detrimentally affect British jobs. On the contrary, if, and I hope, that the British people vote to leave, the following day, the heads of Siemens, of BMW, of Mercedes, of Fiat, of Peugeot, they will be banging down the doors of their prime ministers and chancellors, and they will be saying, Monsieur or Frau, we need a trade deal with the United Kingdom. The idea that post-leave, that we in Britain will not be able to sell minis to the Germans. It's made by BMW. The idea that Mercedes will not be able to sell to the wealthy in Britain is absolute arrant nonsense. And so from that point of view, nothing will change. And there I see two very important economic trends. One, the EU is going backwards. Relative to world economy, the percentage of global GDP, the EU is getting a smaller and smaller percentage. The Far East is getting a bigger one. Africa is even getting a bigger one. That's the first thing. So, you know, why would we want to be locked into an economic bloc which is going backwards? Secondly, over the last 10 years, our exports to the EU have gone down from in excess of 50% of our exports to 45% of our exports. Our exports as a percentage of our total exports outside of the EU have now risen above 55%, therefore. 45% is now to the EU, 55% outside the EU. And that's without the direct trade deals that we would be able to develop following a Brexit. So think about this. Not only we would have the trade that we've got and the jobs that we already have, but we would also then be able to do trade deals with China and India. I would suggest to you, these will be the success and major economies of the 21st century. Don't we want to be doing trade deals with them? Australia, Canada, America, Africa, you name it. We'll be able to do trade deals directly with those countries. I mean, there's an example. Africa, right at the end there. Do people realize that African farmers, you know, we're always going on about, oh, how difficult it is to live in Africa. They've got no money, the poverty, the hunger. I couldn't agree more. And yet, African farmers can basically not export to the EU. Why? Because of the common agricultural policy puts massive tax tariffs on imports from Africa, and massive subsidies to French, Italian, British farmers. So we in Britain pay far more for our food than if we bought it from Africa. Do you think African produce would be cheap? It certainly would. It would be high quality as well. There is just one simple example of if we could do a direct trade deal without the nonsense bureaucratic and socialist tax tariffs of the European Union, that A, our living costs would fall and our jobs would rise, which means our living standards would rise.
Yeah, I was looking at some figures recently about the service sector here in the UK, and the service sector seems to have been restricted by sort of €3 billion because of the restrictions within the EU. Yet a country like Switzerland, which took itself out of that, is able to trade its service sector more than double. So, you know, we are definitely being restricted by the European Union and this inability to set our own trade agreements with countries around the world.
Oh, if only we could be like Switzerland. Switzerland with one of the strongest currencies on the planet, which means that when they import something, it costs them nothing. When go into Switzerland and fill up your tank, your car tank, you're not paying much on petrol or diesel because in dollar terms, it costs the Swiss not a lot to buy fuel. Switzerland is, of course, in the heart of Europe, but lucky for them, not within the regime of the European Union, which means that they are able to trade excellently with the European Union and anyone else who they wish to trade with. And Switzerland, and this may be a coincidence, or it may be as an aside, but isn't it funny that Switzerland has the highest per capita wealth in the whole of Europe? Whereas we are restricted by unbelievably ridiculous regulations to do our business, to run our businesses. You mentioned services there. The French and Germans, as we know, basically run the EU. But which financial centre is one of the top three financial centres in the world? Is it in Frankfurt? Is it in Paris? No, it's in the City of London. And the City of London has to go through the same hoops, and possibly more onerous indeed, than the banks and financial companies in Frankfurt. To which you say, well, that's a level playing field. It's not a level playing field to that extent. What it is a bringing down of the opportunity to do business, to give the Frankfurters and the Parisians a chance to develop their businesses. Well, do you know what? Our businesses are already developed. They're already world class. They're the best in the world. But because of rules and regulations, we're being dragged down to their level. As opposed to with capitalism, with free markets, our banks would get on with it, be able to do their own thing, and would continue to trounce the French and German banks, whereas these guys have actually got a look in, which in a free market world, they wouldn't. The other thing is interesting, the likes of Goldman Sachs, JP Morgan, Citibank, Credit Suisse, Deutsche Bank, Bank Paribas, you name it, they're all very pro the EU. Now that's funny, isn't it? Given what I've just said, how come they're pro the EU? Well, first of all, they can base their businesses wherever they want. So, you know, if they want to go to Frankfurt because ultimately the Frankfurters are getting a look in, they'll go to Frankfurt. They don't really care. What they care about is the phenomenal profit from being part of the EU. Think about the vast profits they made by getting involved with the bailouts with Greece, Portugal, Ireland, Spain. We're talking billions and billions. And then consider those countries joining the EU and the euro in the first place. Think of the vast profits the banks made in the first place by helping them get on board. So they made vast profits helping them get on board. They made vast profits bailing them out, and they will continue to make vast profits because of the EU as opposed to because of free markets. And I'll tell you something else. The EU bureaucracy helps big business. Why do you think the Goldman Sachs and JP Morgans are so pro the EU? Why do you think the Confederation of British Industry, the CBI, is pro the EU? Because the EU helps big business, and this is how it does. Because of regulations. I run a small wealth management practice. If I were in Goldman Sachs, or if I were running Goldman Sachs, I would know that I would be spending a tiny, tiny percentage of my people's time and energy and profits in meeting the regulations. But I, as a small practice owner or an SME business, I spend a lot of my time and energy and money meeting the regulations, because of course the big guys spread it out over billions of revenue. I'm spreading it out over relatively a tiny fraction of that, but I've still got to meet the regulations. That's why big business supports the EU, because the EU supports big business. Think of the fact that there are a few thousand big businesses, there are millions of SMEs. Those millions of SMEs would be helped greatly if we left the EU.
That reminds me of a story that was amazingly on the BBC recently, where they interviewed a pro-Brexit manager of a small business, and he gave the example of one of the bits of legislation he has to maintain is he has to employ somebody every month to go around and count the steps on the step ladders.
Wow.
And make sure that there are 1, 2, 3, 4 steps, and then tick a little box. And that's part of the EU legislation. Now, his point is, if I'm out of that, I can maintain the health and safety of my equipment and of my employees, but I don't have to spend from my profits, I don't have to take from my income to maintain these ridiculous regulations.
The idea that a small business person who has perhaps under 20 employees, has some important customers, the idea that he's not or she is not going to look after his or her customers, is not going to provide the best products for the best value or the best service that he or she possibly can, because he depends on those customers. The idea that he or she is not going to look after his staff, their health, their welfare, because they'll just move to another business where they perceive they're going to get better welfare. The idea that an SME is not going to do what needs to be done without some bureaucrat in an ivory tower 1,000 miles away who has never stepped foot in a similar business, the idea that an SME isn't going to do these things anyway is, again, arrant nonsense.
So we need to get out of this dictatorship. We need to leave it behind and move forward as a nation, as we have been proven to do for hundreds of years in the past.
Well, we absolutely must, if at all possible. Britain saved Europe from totalitarianism twice in the 20th century, at least twice in the 19th century, and then you had the Spaniards before that, and so on. We need to do it again in the 21st century. It really is that simple and that important.
And this time, it's not going to be spears, guns, rifles. It's going to be at the ballot box.
It is indeed going to be in the ballot box. And isn't it ironic that the most undemocratic institution in the so-called democratic world can be taken down by democracy? And I deeply, deeply hope that it will be.
Jonathan Davis, thank you.
My great pleasure.